Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Other Modern. I'm your host, That Damn Pipsqueak, and I'm joined today by Canterbury Egg. This is going to be the start of a new series that I'm hoping to do, highlighting each of the past champions of past GPs, leagues, and so on, since we've started to hit like a pretty considerable number of champion promos at this point. So Egg is the first person I'm bringing on, partially because he has several under his belt, and also partially because he has the first ever champion promo given out. But yeah, Egg, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit? I assume most people listening to this know who you are slash have heard you on past episodes, but given that this episode is going to be all about you and your accomplishments, it might make sense to do that.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, Canterbury Egg, you probably know me as the admin on the regular Discord, moderator, curator, whatever. You've seen my username around. I have been playing in MSEM on and off since the very, very beginning, which we'll talk about today. And as you'll see from the deck list we're going to go over, I apparently don't stick to a consistent strategy. I would have said that I was most likely to be registering counter spells, but there's some weirdos in here, that's for sure.
Yeah, were you playing in MSEM before it became MSEM 2?
I was, a little bit. So MSEM, before it became MSEM 2, was basically just like a collaboration of anyone who had a set that they wanted played with. There was no real curation to it, and so you could just put sets into a folder and they would pull cards from that, and it was horrific. There was no balance, really, no balancing committee, so whatever you printed just got into the format. Basically, every deck was some degenerate combo. I think the best deck before they decided to scrap it was like an infinite self-mill deck that used probably one of my broken cards to mill your entire library and create a bunch of mana with cards with Surface, which was an ability that triggered when it was milled to make mana and then play whatever it was from your graveyard to win the game. Basically, everything was a turn one game. It was a disaster.
Yeah, I believe the two decks that I've heard people talk about from the format before are, one, there was a turn two burn deck, because it had like one mana damage doublers for some reason.
Yeah, that's true.
And Herzy apparently had like an undefeated 12 game win streak as blue black control shortly before the format closed. So some things never change, I would argue.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah. So after that, this isn't going to be like a history of MSEM 2, but Time Spiraled, I believe, was one of the like big impetuses towards, hey, let's like, you know, let's clean things up, let's have an actual format. And the first GP that was run was GP Alexandria. Initially, the theme, I believe, was going to be cities that appear in like both Magic and real life. I think it got to Alexandria and Baghdad, and then petered out pretty quickly after that, since
yeah,
I think
it's a hard theme.
Yeah, fewer options. But back in GP Alexandria, you won it all with blue-red spells, and picked Master Tranquility as your promo. People might not know Master Tranquility as much these days. I don't think this card's been registered in a hot sec, but even for like the first year of MSEM, which I was there for like only half of, this guy was a absolute powerhouse. So if you don't have all the cards up with you right now, Master Tranquility is one in a blue for 0/4. It has prowess, and when you cast a non-creature spell, you may swap its power and toughness until end of turn. So it blocks really effectively and then can swing in as a 5/1, which, you know, kills people pretty quickly. And it's from Surging Tide, right?
Is it from Surging Tide or original?
Maybe Goliaths.
I think it's Goliaths. I can't remember, to be honest. I think it's Goliaths, though.
Yeah, so do you remember anything particular about that? I managed to dig up a deck list that's absolutely ancient here. Do you remember anything about the deck or playing it or that first GP?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk a little bit about how I built this deck. It was basically, you know, blue-red tempo has been a deck since forever. Magic has gone very few eras without there being some sort of, is it small creatures, small spells deck. And I felt like the best way to go into a format that I didn't know what anyone was going to be playing at all, because this is the first Grand Prix, there hadn't been any tournaments run, this was very brand new. So my strategy was finish the game early and counter every spell that I could. So I put a bunch of small spells and a bunch of small creatures with prowess and a bunch of cantrips, and then just ran creatures at people's faces. And Master of Tranquility was big in that deck because the difference between swinging for 2 after casting a spell and swinging for 5 after casting a spell is enormous. And when there's not that much, you know, aggressive removal running around, you can be pretty safe and just, you know, chunking in for 5 damage at a time, and it ends the game pretty fast.
Yeah, one thing that I think is really cool to see about this deck is all of these cards, as far as I can tell, in both the main deck and the sideboard, are still legal, actually. There's no cards that left us with Crotation, no cards here that have gotten banned. It did eat 2 nerfs over the years, so Rogar's Frenzy, the tokens now come in tapped, and Vedalken Reshaper is now 4 blue-blue instead of 5 and a blue. That card is kind of messed up to think about if it only costs single density, so I'm glad that's not something we still deal with, but man, it's really cool to look at the small ball of this list. My first GP, I was also on a blue-red spells deck because I was convinced other people weren't optimizing the list properly, and I just utterly ate shit because I hit a bunch of decks that blue-red spells is not going to be good into. But this exact sort of deck list definitely has a special place in my heart, and it's really cool to see that it's, you know, literally always been here since the start of MSEM.
Yeah, Vedalken Reshaper, if I were completely impartial in what got the promo treatment, probably would have been the MVP of the deck, because, you know, obviously it's just like a gross card on its face, you know, a 1-mana 2/3 that picks up an instant or sorcery is very good. But the way the deck is built, you have a lot of card selection and a lot of counter spells and a lot of burn, and the ability for Reshaper to be the best of those 3 things at any given time let you get a little bit more interaction for stuff on the stack, or a little bit more interaction for stuff on the board, or just some more card flow if you need to just move the game forward, was huge, because it kind of let you play to basically all states of the game, which there's not a lot of stuff that returns cards, instant and sorcery specifically, from the graveyard to the hand that gets a lot of play. So it's nice to remember the days when you could do that with a tempo deck and feel like you were moving the game forward.
Yeah. The other things of note about Grand Prix Alexandra, it was around an 8 or 9 person GP, so fairly small by today's standards, but honestly really impressive for a group of people coming together to play a completely untested new custom format, especially like back before all of the, you know, community expansion and legwork had been done. And it was back in the double elimination days, so you went undefeated through the winner's bracket, matched off against Herzy at the top of the winner's bracket. Herzy won the loser's finals for the bracket reset, and then you won the Grand Prix in the grand finals. So
yeah. And at that point, Herzy was playing Glory Turbo Fog Control, which basically just tried to prevent you from ever hitting them with damage and then get to 10 Glory counters. And that matchup, I think, is very, very good for a deck like this, because you have all the time in the world to dictate the speed of the game. Basically, as long as you never let them get to 10 glory, you're fine. And you can counter whatever fog spells they cast that would let them get to 10 glory, or you can, you know, burn them to death at some point. Or it's just the slow deck that is easily counterable let this deck have a field day, because this deck did not really run out of juice. It just kept moving the game forward.
Yeah, and the fact that you have cheap threats also makes it really hard for Herzy to run out and protect the Ambition's Crown, which was one of the core engines to make the deck tick. For anyone unfamiliar, it's a 3-mana artifact from Tourney at Whiterun. It says, at the beginning of your end step, you draw a card, and if an opponent deals damage to you, they gain control of it, which might be familiar to some people. But that was back in June of 2017, so closing in on 7 years ago. You then didn't have a GP win for 3 years, whereupon in, what's 1 month before June? May?
Yeah,
in May of 2020. You won GP Helsinki with Hydra, spelled H-I-H. You know what I mean. I'm struggling right now, apparently. So, do you want to tell us about this deck slash the engine behind it, as it were?
Yeah, this deck was insane. So Hydra was me trying to prove that the Phasma Pillar Thriving Hydra combo was broken, and as it turns out, it was. The combo was old Phasma Pillar cost X and 2 green, and it was 0/0. Entered the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters, and then when it died, you could put a card from your hand with power and toughness equal to or less than its power and toughness, Phasma Pillar's power and toughness, onto the battlefield. Which meant that if you played it for X equals 0, it was a 0/0 that died immediately. And when you did, it could put a 0/0 from your hand into play, which was Thriving Hydra for this deck. Thriving Hydra, of course, 8 mana, Trample Haste, 0/0 that comes into play with 4 +1/+1 counters, buff your board, and then when it attacks, it doubles the number of +1/+1 counters. Basically, it does a Crater Hoof kind of thing, but in Hydra form. So what you would do is you would just play a bunch of mana dorks in the first couple turns, then Phasma Pillar into a Hydra, and all of a sudden you're swinging with, like, with just 2 mana dorks, that becomes, if my math is right, a 22 damage on turn 3.
Yep.
Which was basically the goal of the deck. And then I had a couple of, you know, cheap counter spells and Beacon of the Wild, which would get the Phasma Pillar for X equals 2, so just 3 mana. Old Intrepid, which of course was, you know, the world's most broken engine. I think that was back when it was 3 mana, 5/5 flying vigilance, right?
I'm pretty sure it had lost, it either lost vigilance or 1 point of power and toughness by then, but yeah, it still definitely had 2 of 3.
Yeah, so I definitely just won some games on the back of going turn 2 Intrepid, hit you, hit you, hit you, hit you, and then the game was over.
It also had pre-nerf Ardy Study, which was a 3 mana archive that said you can just play permanents from the top of the library. So if your deck was all or mostly permanents, which, you know, this deck had, was largely that, it was kind of a 3 mana draw 5 in green. And you also had pre-nerf, but not pre 2 of the nerfs it has received, Temporary Treason. So back when it was a 3 mana, Vanishing 4, but before it could hit land, or after it stopped being able to hit lands.
Oh, I think Temporary Treason hitting lands is so stupid.
That basically lasted like a month and a half, but that was a very strange month and a half given the amount of arguing that was being done over we should let it keep hitting fetch lands. Because that was the real abuse case.
Yeah, no joke.
One thing I'll mention about Intrepid is you also had a pre-nerf Precursed Sanctum as your primary Intrepid target, which is kind of a cool card in this type of list.
Oh yeah, I forgot about pre-nerf Precursor Sanctum. Yeah, tucking a Hydra under Sanctum, or even a Caterpillar under Sanctum to just die and play a Hydra from hand was awesome.
Yeah. You won in the finals versus Black Red Burn, which was being piloted by Augur. Before that, you beat Hersey's Chart Control. I think that's honestly a really cool showing from this deck, given that one of those is like one of the fastest decks that was in the format, and the other one is one of the slowest decks that was in the format. And the ability to, you know, beat both of those, definitely a sign of a very strong deck.
Yeah, and like I said, I think that this deck would not have put up nearly as good a showing if it didn't have the four broken Intrepids, because I definitely won a lot of games on the back of turn two Intrepid just being too much damage for people to comfortably respond to with the threat of me also comboing off at any point. I vaguely remember the match against Hersey. I think I probably put like 6 Hydras into play in that match because they kept getting answered, but I kept just having the combo, and Chart Control does not kill fast, and eventually I just would get a Hydra that stuck, and it would probably win the game, because Hydra wins the game when it sticks.
One kind of interesting thing, timeline-wise, is this was the, I believe it was either the last GP of the season, or second to last GP of the season. Second to last one. There was one more after this, and then we got, 3 new sets added to the format, the first time the format had, you know, that sort of 3 sets at once, which was Kamba Old Dawn, Love Song, and Survive the Night, which that was, you know, obviously we're both a little bit biased towards that era, but that definitely was one of the finer eras of MSEM, just in terms of there was a lot of people, there was a lot of excitement, and there were a lot of really wild decks running around. It was shortly before Dodger joined the format. In general, a lot of cool stuff. So the first month of the new season, you broke it with a Esper Flash deck. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and because this is all about championing, I will briefly say the first two champion cards that I picked were both cards that I designed. Master of Tranquility I picked specifically because I didn't think anyone else would ever want to champion it again, just because it's not like a card that will fit into any deck except basically blue-red spells. Thriving Hydra, I wanted to champion one of the two sides of the combo, and I was going to push pretty hard for Phasmapillar to get nerfed after this because I didn't think it was a fair card. So I wanted to champion the one that was actually going to stick around in its designed form. But yeah, let's talk about Endless Disco. This was back when the Endless Discovery card was basically 4-mana draw 3 plus 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 plus. It was an enchantment for 1 that exiled 3 cards. We've just pulled up the old text on it so I can remember what it did. You could pay blue at any time to put one of those cards into your hand, and then when there were no cards left, it shuffled back into your deck. So basically, you could pay 1 on turn 1 to exile 3 cards, and then whenever you needed that card, you could just pull it from Endless Discoveries. And because you could split it across turns, it never felt like you were investing much mana into it at all. Basically, it felt like Ancestral. It was incredibly powerful. But the real heroes of this deck were the two copies of Prodigious Ponya, who at this point I think we all know is just an all-star in decks that want to play Flash, and the 4 copies of TT-23 Aegis. Man, I miss casting that card.
That card has definitely not really managed to come back since this one GP, but man, it looked so good in that GP.
Yeah, that thing just, I mean, it attacks for so much damage.
One other thing that I think is like really notable about old Endless Discoveries is the cards were all exiled face up, so it wasn't a case of like, you know, oh, you were functionally drawing cards. The amount of card selection you got off of it and the amount of like psychic damage you got to deal to your opponent by just saying, hey, there's a counterspell on the field right now. You can see it, I can see it. I have 4 mana up, so at any point in time I can pay 1 mana to put that counterspell into my hand and then cast it, is just like incredibly hard to play against.
Yeah, there were a lot of times when I just discoveried and hit like cursory glance, out of body experience, land, and your opponent's just like, well, I can't play this game anymore.
This also has Nereba, Ares Pillar. It had the pre-nerf mono fetches in the mana base. It's lost Nocturnal's Informant. A little bit unfortunate. Oh, also notably, this had instant speed Vibrant Rapture.
Yeah,
this is
yeah.
The last GP when anyone was allowed to play with instant speed Vibrant Rapture.
Another psychotic design. The Nocturnal's Informant, I wanted to be better than they were. It felt like there were going to be some matchups where having a 3-1 that you could flash in and then just start drawing cards off of was going to be great, but it always just like kind of died. Like against creature decks, it was bad. Against interactive decks, it was bad. I don't know what it was supposed to be good against, but it was really bad the whole GP. I sided it out basically every time, so it was no big loss to Esper Flash to lose that deck. The big loss was losing the one snow-covered island. That was a disaster.
Unironically, the snow-covered lands has had disastrous consequences on the trivialness of Wanderlust in two-color decks, certainly.
100%.
Which, I would argue, good thing. But still. The finals, I made it to the finals as well. I was playing another deck that was built around a Survive of the Night card, which was the OG builds of Podlight Manifesto. So we've now seen Pod done to death. This was kind of a slower version from now what we see these days with what lurks beyond. And the one thing that I will always hold very close to my heart is the one copy of Anuren Encounters, which was not a particularly good card, but, you know, I had some cool moments where it was the right tutor target. And one moment in the finals where I cast it, you attempted to counter it, and I had to remind you that you had chosen to put this spell can't be countered on your card.
Yeah, I actually remember exactly what you said, because I put cursory glance onto the stack, and you just said resolves, and I just kind of looked at it like, ah, yes. Yes, it does.
And as I clarified, I wouldn't have done it if you hadn't designed the card.
Yeah, it was a final, so it's a totally fair play to just be like, hey, you made a mistake, this is the finals, tighten up, but it was my design, there was no excuse.
I think we've all been there, though, one point or in time or another. If you have enough cards in MSEM, you do tend to forget, like, wait, what did I decide to do with that card? I pushed it that much?
Yeah.
It has haste? I gave it haste.
Just like going back and looking at set files you made like 2 months ago, you look at your card, just like, what the hell was I doing? What on earth? So, I think it was totally fair for me to forget that, but that matchup for Podlight was not awesome.
No, I think it would have been better in a world where Vibrant Rapture is a sorcery.
Yes.
But certainly instant speed does not help. But, you know, there's always next month. Come Grand Prix Kamloops, you were on a very different deck from Aspar Flash.
A very different deck than anyone had ever registered anywhere before. deck was me looking through our cards and just like, I saw Kellythross's workshop, and I think that I had been like on a constructed canon video kick, and someone was making videos on like vintage shops, and I was looking through our cards and saw Kellythross's workshop. This is back when it added 3 mana, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So I saw Kelly's workshop, which was it's a legendary land, taps to add 1 or tap to add 3 if you had 3 or more artifacts. You can only spend it on artifacts. But I was like, what are our best artifacts? Because we had a lot of good cheap ones. And I was just like scrolling through the cards like, wait a minute, we have actual factual Lodestone Golem in MSEM? Just like Lodestone Golem, the card in MSEM that you can play on turn 2 with the Kellythross's Workshop. And I built a deck around that because that's an insane thing to do. It's good enough for canon vintage, so I felt like it was probably good enough for MSEM.
There's a really funny conversation you can dig up where someone, I believe Cajun, was asking, huh, I wonder what cards that are banned or restricted in Legacy and Vintage would be safe to put into MSEM. And I helpfully am like, oh, Cajun, you should totally add Lodestone Golem to the Villains the Musical bonus sheet, since this was shortly before Villains the Musical was submitted to MSEM. So there was a moment where, when I saw your deck list, I just like had this, oh god, all of my sins have come to haunt me in this at one moment. Especially because I had also pushed for Kellythross's Workshop to gain the tap add colorless mode if you don't have Metalcraft. There was a lot of moments in early MSEM balance that I made very questionable decisions, is how I will phrase it. You also had a pre-nerf Glistening Chalice in that deck.
Yeah, there are a couple of cards in here that I actually had pre-nerf that were incredibly important to the deck, so I'll just talk through a couple of them. The Glistening Chalice, which now triggers at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, used to be a tap ability. So it's a 2 mana, and then you could tap it to either discount your artifacts or tax non-artifact spells until your next turn, which meant that the turn you played it, you could immediately put a tax on the field, which was incredibly important because on the turn, or on the games where you didn't immediately just turn about a Lodestone Golem, being able to still tax your opponent, slow him down by a turn, was very critical. Did Wilted Lotus actually get a nerf before we removed it from the format?
No, I'm pretty sure it was removed from the format kind of on its own merits. Not on its own merits, rather, but
I might dig that up after this. I feel like the draw used to be attached to the mana generation ability and you didn't have to pay for it.
Oh, yeah, no, that definitely used to be the case. Did we nerf that?
Apparently. I'm looking at the removed card here. Now you pay 1 to draw a card when it dies, basically. Wilted Lotus was in Crotation, so we no longer have access to it, which is a real shame because it would be a lot of fun to see how broken this card gets. 1 mana for an artifact enters the battlefield tapped, and then you can pay 1 and sack it to add 2 mana of any one color to your mana pool, and then draw a card was what the text said. So it was a Lotus that was delayed by a turn, but still +1 mana, +1 card, and was just another way to get the Lodestone Golem out really early. Man, that card was stupid.
This deck also had one of the pre-nerf Intrepids. I can't remember the exact one. It had pre-nerf Monument of Queens and Precursor Sanctum. I believe this was also pre-nerf Heart of Zadina, so it was... Oh, no, this was post-nerf. Pre-nerf Heart of Zadina did not last nearly that long.
It was pre-nerf Blundering Clock Tower, too, which was what I killed most games.
This deck is also the reason why Brilliant Academy had one of the highest win rates of all Discoveries of Akiva cards for, like, years. It might still, because that was just, like, one of your ways of producing white slash blue mana.
Yeah, so I had four Moonlight Sanctums because I went all in on saying, all right, spells cost one more to cast, but as it turned out, taxing my own spells was awful, so every single game, I sided out four Moonlight Sanctums and sided in four Shining Crusaders. Every single one.
Shining Crusader is such a sweet card, and definitely still one of the reasons to play shops, even now after the nerfs. One other like cool interaction I want to mention about this deck is Zadina Bazaar was a shockingly powerful card in this shell. Really not something I would have expected. If you don't know what it is, 3-mana artifact with tap, sack an artifact or enchantment to draw a card. And this deck had the ability to, you can just kind of, you know, throw your random extra, like, Wilted Lotuses or Warded Tomes after you've already generated cards off of them into it to draw more. But you also had it as a really sweet combo with Servant of Armageddon to have this kind of tutorable Wrath of God, which definitely gave you a lot of game versus creature decks.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, the main combo with it was Warded Tome, because the deck really relied on Warded Tome to get early artifacts. And Warded Tome used to cost one, by the way. Now it costs two mana, but this cost one at the time. So you just play a Warded Tome and immediately draw a card, and then basically let it sit in play until you had a Zadina Bazaar to cycle through it. But the ability to just use Servant of Armageddon to be like, and by the way, blow up the whole battlefield, but I still have all of my important lands and a bunch of artifacts, and you have nothing, was critical to a couple of the matchups that I ran into, for sure.
And unfortunately, same thing as the month prior, I also was in the finals, and I also died horribly. This was also an O2 matchup with, apparently, there were like 20 people in Twitch chat watching Dodger commentate the game, which, like, unfathomable to me, even nowadays. But,
wow.
Yeah, this was... had a pre-nerf Sevid, and then otherwise, and oh yeah, Demon Worthy was still in the format. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it turns out that the deck that is largely playing at sorcery speed and is at least a little bit clunky gets very sad when you turn to Glistening Chalice into turn three, slam a Lodestone Golem on you. So I think I cast like maybe six spells that entire finals. Especially because I got at least one of my lands blown up by some Wasteland variant. I can't remember which one.
Did I have some sort of Wasteland in here? What was I doing with that?
Forex Perilous Passage. So I got Tectonic.
Of course. Oh, I remember. Yeah. Activate only if an opponent controls four or more lands. The Wanderlust Destroyer.
Yeah, also Encroaching Seasons to hate out some snowlands that are running around.
Right, I did this to kill snow basics because everyone had one snow basic of each type for Wanderlust, so I just had Encroaching Season to be like, and you played your Snow Island, guess I'll just blow it up.
Rookie mistake, never play out the Snow Island.
Oh yeah.
So back-to-back month on those, only a couple short, so that was July into August. And then the following month, I believe... you either made top eight and lost in the semifinals or quarterfinals, or you like just barely missed top eight. Neither of us showed up in top eight for the first time in several months. But it didn't matter because two GP wins and some impressive, I think you did some decent leaguing as well, meant you locked a promo for the season promo. So talk to us about that last one.
Yeah, I think this was back when I ran through a league with the Mias gods, back when they were like, I don't even remember what the combo was, but there was a way to put the gods into play, and they had weird effects before they got reworked. It was a complete degenerate all-in combo deck, but it did net me a few wins against people who didn't know the deck list. I'll have to look that back up, because I don't want to talk out my butt here, but yeah, so the last promo, which... the congrats you beat Pipsqueak twice promo, I decided to pick a card that had felt critical in my leagues and critical in my control decks and was just like one of my favorite cards to cast, and so I picked Unraveling, which I probably would have promoed if I knew that Endless Discovery was going to get such a vast change from the Endless Disco deck. But Unraveling is just like, it's such an eminently fair control piece, because for 3 mana, it's cancel the first time you cast it. Or for 3 mana, it's like fog. Or for 3 mana, it's a bad cycle. Like, it's not that good the first time you cast it, and it just continues to gain value over the course of the game. But other than freezing lands, which, like, I guess you have to have a third mode on there, doesn't feel like a super exciting mode, but the amount of just, like, iterative value you get by casting Unravelings over and over and over, it's hard to express as a control player just how good that feels. And so I wanted a super pretty art to memorialize how many of these I'd cast over the course of the season, and thus this promo was born.
It's really cool to look back and see what has changed and what hasn't changed in the past, like, you know, 3.5 years to 4 years, over the course of all of these ones. I think MSEM is, like, kind of going back to a similar place as it was back then, where there are some kind of fair decks that are just going to grind you out. There are some fast decks that are just looking to kill you. And generally running the whole spectrum. I think the fact that MSEM is, like, you know, roughly twice as big as it was back then goes a long way in making the format feel so diverse and so open, because, you know, as much as all of these decks have been playable historically, now we actually see people playing them. You know, we see a bunch of deck variety that normally you wouldn't really get, because you only have, like, 12 people or 16 people trying to show off what they can. So it's really cool to see the, you know, Grand Prix Alexandria deck being similar in ethos to modern decks that, you know, modern prowess decks that we still see running around. And there's just, like, kind of these neat reflections of the history throughout all of it.
Yeah, honestly, I think my deck from GP Alexandria, if we had expressive iteration, could come back and just play in a tournament right now and win. Like, I think it's one critical piece away from being instantly competitive, just because that's the nature of small prowess creatures and iterative tempo value.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of, like, little changes to make about the deck. There's, like, oh, well, maybe you run this threat instead, or instead of Omp, do you want to run Seek Prophecy? But, like, it really just, at its core, is good burn spells, good cantrips, good creatures, good counter magic. And it was a good recipe back then. It was enough to win a GP, and it's still probably a good enough recipe now.
Yeah, honestly, I still think that a 2-mana 2/3 that enters the battlefield and pulls back an instant or sorcery from your graveyard is probably playable in some decks.
I mean, Contratown played that card, and to a lot of success. Honestly, the thought of Contratown getting to play 1-mana Vedalken Reshaper is horrifying, so really glad that's not a thing we have to deal with.
I don't know, it was pretty sick to cast, I have to say that much. It felt really good.
I could believe that. And I mean, I don't know, we did manage to bring Intrepid back partially. Who knows what we do next?
Yeah, the one downside to MSEM right now is that there are so many good players and so many good players playing good decks that I can't bring my nonsense piles and expect to win GPs. I have to actually, like, put some thought into building a deck now if I want to spike another GP.
No more 5 color hounds with counter magic, unfortunately. But that's certainly a league story for another time, I suppose. All right. Thank you so much for coming on, Egg, and hope everyone enjoys this episode, and expect to see more of this exact series in the future.
Yeah, absolutely happy to be here. And now that I realize it's been 4 years since I won a GP, I feel like I got to get back on the horse. Maybe 2024 is the year of the Egg. Let's find out.
Let me tell you, after, like, winning a GP with, like, again, similarly, like, 4 or 5 years of downtime in between them, it feels great. Would recommend.
All right, 4x Kane Dancer. Let's see where we can go from here.
Let me see how I get Craig to stop recording.